So, for the nerds among us, it is stat time. We have got numbers, we have got percentages, we have got pie charts. We almost had bar charts, but is it 'cause I'm in front of the mics? Am I too far forwards? I'm good. Okay, great. So, thank you to those who filled out the Crossway Friendship Survey. 83 people. Which is pretty solid. I think there are 84 here this morning. Now, one of the things someone said was, you guys at the front, among other things, you need to be better at modeling openness. So here's me modeling openness. The way I write a talk like this is I think and I read and I listen to stuff and I think and I read, and then quite close to when I have to give the talk, I go, oh no, I need to make this coherent for other people to be able to process it. So I've got a lot of notes. So forgive me for that. If it's a touch, just getting extra lectins, so then I can spread them out. These ones over here in particular, this is comments that some of you guys made, which I will deliver anonymously, not least because I actually don't know who you are, so I have no choice but to deliver them anonymously, but they'll kind of drop in at various points. So, the survey. Let's dive straight in. Are you, this is our age, look how diverse we are as a church. Age 25 to 39. Maybe we should have split that down a bit more, but goes without saying, we're a young church. Decent number of 60 plus, and a few in the 40 to 59, and a few in the 16 to 24. I guess fewer people. I mean, also we've got loads under 16, and sort of, but they weren't filling it out. Next slide, please. Where did you grow up? This is interesting. This changed as the survey went along. It started off being quite a lot. I was born in London, but it kind of shrunk a bit as time went by. So we're actually 70%, well, of respondents, 83. You can play games on who does and doesn't respond to these sorts of surveys. But I was not born in London, but I currently live here, big, 70%. I was born in London and never lived anywhere else. And I was born in London but have lived elsewhere, so sort of whatever that is, like 30%-ish. So that's where we grew up, which that was interesting to me because I think when we, this talk, which is kind of like friendship as Londoners at Crossway, just came up as we were chatting about it in the staff meeting. And Jane was like, well, I'll do my talk on this. And then we started talking about, well, what does friendship look like in, particularly in a transient church? So my church experience in London was, I grew up in Dover in a small town. Well, I was in a village on the edge of Dover, so literally grew up in a village, which we talk about villages metaphorically in a bit, and then moved to London for university. That was 20 years ago, so I lived fully 20 years of my life in a small town where if I go back there now, I will still walk down the high street and see probably 5-10 people that I know, whereas you can walk around London all day, of course, and not see people that you know. I could go back to my home church and see a bunch of the same people, but sort of 20 years older. Whereas I was at St. Anne's Bishopsgate, the church that planted Crossway 5 years ago. I was there for 12 years, and I remember about 3 years in, just kind of looking around and going, all my friends have left. And about 6 years later, most of the new friends that I made have left. And so being there for 12 years, and by the end kind of feeling like a dinosaur, I remember when I left and people said, do you miss it? And I said, well, I do, but also I don't, because I know that the people, if I'd stayed, my friends would have left again. So it's the people, that are part of that. So kind of reflecting on those, but then interestingly, and I wrote down on my notes, everyone is not like you. Of course, for lots in Crossway, you're a Londoner. You were born here. Perhaps you still live in the kind of the bit of London where you were born and raised, whether or not you've moved away, come back. But so your experience of church life in London is very different from my experience of church life in London, and that's one of the things I think we want to reflect on. Next slide, please. How long have you lived in London? Again, a good number of us, 20 plus years, 44%. Mostly, the vast majority of us, more than 6 years in London, and a good number of us over 11 years. Next slide, please. Would you say you're an introvert or an extrovert? So fairly extroverted, red, slight majority, fairly introverted, kind of slight minority when you kind of add those figures together, which is kind of roughly the same as the national average. We're a tiny little bit more extroverted than the national average as respondents do the survey. So it's kind of close enough that it could be just more extroverts were like, I'll respond to a friendship survey. But then would more introverts go, I like Google Forms? Who knows? Next slide, please. How many friends overall would you have? Now, this is where it gets interesting and where I kind of regret not having the time to make a bar chart for this one, comparing Crossway with the UK as a whole. Because, interestingly, and we're not here to pat ourselves on the back, we want to challenge one another and kind of say, let's do better. But Crossway as a whole, respondents have many more friends than the average person in the UK. So lots of people... Yeah, no definition of friends. So there was a definition of close friends, but not a definition of friends. That's kind of deliberate, that kind of, what do you think of as a friend? Oh, I would say that I have X number of friends. So yeah, Crossway people in general, kind of hoping that Crossway don't define their friends too differently in their minds from the population as a whole, then it's kind of similar-ish enough. So the big differences come around where, like, in terms of, so fewer friends down here, coming around to here, general population... 12% of Londoners actually would say, I've got 16 to 25 friends. Crossway, 22% would say, I've got 16 to 25 friends. Again, these figures up here, much, much bigger. So many more people at Crossway saying, yeah, sure, I've got 25 friends, 50 friends, more than 100 friends, 15 of us. More than 15% of us, not 15 of us, 15% of us. Next one, please, Ben, thank you. Close friends. Again, many, many more. So lots of people saying, I've got 4 or 5 close friends, I've got 6 or 7 close friends, I've got 8 to 10 close friends. So Crossway, 17% of people say, I've got 8 to 10 close friends, someone I can depend on and they depend on me. Crossway says 17%. London, 5%. Only 5% of people would say that they have that many friends. So again, we might be defining it slightly differently, although we use the same definition in our survey as the YouGov survey that the London stats are based on. But it seems like we've got more friends. Where did you meet your current close friends? You said you have no close friends. So just a couple of people, actually, on this survey said, I have no close friends. 3 people. Tick that. And this was a kind of tick all that apply on here. I chose not to have close friends. The biggest one, I struggle to make close friends. So for those within us for whom that's the case, and I wanted to actually at the beginning, there's some encouraging stuff from here, and it's so encouraging that so many are here. Like, you know, 80 people have given up their Saturday morning to come out and sit in a room and think about how we can be better friends together. That's wonderful. But if you are one of the people that really struggles to make friends, that could make it even harder because you're thinking, well, why don't I have friends? So while all of us, we want to be kind of encouraging, let's ourselves work harder to be making friends with others, we also want to be thinking, let's look out for those who are around us who don't seem to have so many friends. Next slide, please, Ben. Thank you. Where did you meet your current close friends? Again, for Crossway folks, loads at church. Loads at another church, loads at Crossway. This is an interesting one where if we could dig down into it, so 55% of respondents to the survey don't have close friends within Crossway on the definition of close friend that we used. Now, if we've only been here 6 months or a year, then, well, we'll see how long it takes to make close friends. That's not super surprising. But if that's people who've been here 18 months, 2 years, then that's a shame and that's sad, and we need to work hard at that. We'll skip over some of the other. One more that's interesting. Best friend. Do you have someone who you would call your best friend? Roughly the same as the general population. Just above 50% of people would say, yes, I have a best friend. It's interesting. This one, like about 2% of the UK population as a whole say, I do have a best friend, but they would not call me their best friend. No one at Crossway. Like, if I know they don't call me their best friend, they're not my best friend. It would seem... and Ben, one last, I think. When was the last time you made a new friend? Again, Crossway, way ahead of like the national average on this. So 28% of people would say in the last month, 35% of people would say in the last 6 months, whereas London, that's 12% and 13%. So we're kind of, you know, tripling in terms of making new friends as we go along. Encouraging, kind of how it should be. Thank you very much, Ben. I think we'll stop there. Well, everything good takes work. We've been thinking about friendship, and one of the interesting things about friendship is the difficulty of defining friendship. Jamie helpfully has already talked about some of the stuff I was going to talk about because I've got way too much material. And so Aristotle's stuff about friends of utility, of pleasure, and of the good. So if you want to follow along on the handout, I've got a very complicated table comparing different kinds of friendships and the way that different people speak about them. And One of the things about friendship which is interesting is that friendship is what the kind of the academic folks call an incidental relationship. So you can be a friend, so it can be a freestanding relationship. We are friends. That is our relationship. That is who we are. Or it can be an incidental relationship. As we talked about, you can have a work friend. You can be friends with your parents or not friends with your parents. You can be friends with your spouse or not friends with your spouse. With friendship, particularly the freestanding friendships or with others as well, there's no formality to a friendship. Anyone can end a friendship. If we're friends with someone, we're choosing it. And if we want to be friends with someone and they don't want to be friends with us, well, then we're not friends. We just really like that person. And then, of course, there's a complication we were talking on our table about. There are some people we don't see for years, but we still consider them friends. Others we see all the time, and we get on fine, but we wouldn't say that they're friends. They're just people we know. So we all distinguish between acquaintances and friends, and the line is funny. But so here we got in this table, we've got... Do you know, I only put the Aristotle stuff on there because I thought if someone's going to come up to me afterwards and go, where do you think Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics fits into this situation? Michael is nodding. He's like, yes, I would have asked that. So here you go. C.S. Lewis's kind of definition, because we talked a bit about that. I've got some more quotes from C.S. Lewis. He's got kind of like, you've got your acquaintances, is kind of like people you know. Then you've got your companions, the people you're living alongside, doing life with, and then you've got your friends. So C.S. Lewis has a really high definition of friends. So when he says friends, I think he means what most of us would call close friends. And then this guy, Geoffrey Hall, whose research has this stuff about how long it takes to make a new friend, he kind of splits it slightly further. He says, you've got your acquaintances, then you've got your casual friends, which is kind of slightly different to an acquaintance. So like you go to the gym, there's everyone at the gym, and there's some people that you nod to, and you would recognize if you pass them in the street, and you might go, yeah, all right. They're an acquaintance. But then there's the person that you talk to, and they're not really a friend, but they're kind of like a casual friend. So they're a friend, but they're not like a close friend. And then there's people that you're really close friends with. And that casual friendship could easily become a good friendship or a close friendship, but it's not necessarily going to be that. Oh, I've left my my C.S. Lewis in my bag. Here we go. I thought I would have the oldest copy of C.S. Lewis's The Four Loves in the Room, but Jamie beat me on that. His is much more ragged than mine. So just before the quote that Jamie read to us from C.S. Lewis, I'm going to read up to that bit. So he talks about this thing of companionship, companions, people that we're doing life alongside, what we're going to call in a bit the village. And he says this companionship is only the matrix of friendship. It is often called friendship, and many people, when they speak of their friends, mean only their companions. But it is not friendship in the sense that I give to the word. And he says, friendship arises out of mere companionship when two people say, you too, when they discover that thing in common. And as soon as we kind of finished that session, Kathy said, well, you know, we could all be friends in Crossway. In some sense, we are all friends because we all have this common passion and common commitment in Jesus. But there's a lot of us. You know, we can't all be good friends, realistically. There just isn't enough time in the day, in the week, in the year to do that. I think, judging by what these guys call it, I think it would be, we might not want to use this terminology because it's a little bit kind of standoffish, but realistically, what some of us will be in church, and that is okay, is kind of casual friends. As in, we're friends, but we're not in and out of one another's lives all the time, because then we would be ending up spreading ourselves too thinly and not committed enough to the few. Now, what we want, what we all want, is this kind of sort of close little group of friends, the 3 to 5 close friends that we're walking through life with, who are with us through difficult times. But in between, we need sort of this in-between stage, which is the village. Now, Geoffrey Hall, in his research, he's got this interesting stuff on how long it takes to make a friend. And their research says this: to move from an acquaintance to a casual friend is about kind of 40 to 60 hours of content, of spending time together to move into that stage. Then from an acquaintance to a friend, that's a total, so not it's not cumulative, but a total of about 60 to 80 hours. To make a close friend, and they've done loads and loads of research on this, to make a close friend, a really good friend, takes about 200 hours. Now, that explains, we didn't kind of highlight this, but that explains why when you say, where did you make your close friends, so many people say school or university or, you know, college or something like that, because that is the time when it was, we were just spending all of the time with other people. We spent all of them. It was very easy to make friends with them. And that was a little bit of a light bulb moment as I was listening to that particular podcast with that research in. I think back, so Grace and I got married just 2 years ago, so it's kind of, I'm still friends with all of the guys that were my best men and my ushers. Of the ushers that I wasn't related to, there were six ushers and my best man. My best man was my housemate. We lived together for 2 years. My other ushers were a housemate, Adam, a housemate, Matt, my housemate, Logan, that I used to go to the gym with two or three times a week, and we're in the same Bible study group for about 3 years. Steve, who I was at Bible college with, who it was just 1 year, but we were at the gym kind of three times a week, pretty much every week, and family movie night on Fridays. And then Tim, who was prayer partner, running partner, and we used to go to the gym together. Bit of a theme. As Matt and I, Matt, my best man, and I were talking about this, and he actually included it in his speech, he said, Holty, you know, I realize I'm pretty much the only one that you've not regularly worked out with, so thank you for not just loving me for my body. But then I've got other housemates that I lived with, and they were Christians, and I liked them, but we're not close friends. Like, we're friends, we get on, when we bump into one another, we have a chat, but we're not close friends, so there is that something more. And so in adult life, we need to be patient and realistic about how long it takes to make close friends. So not to kind of go, oh, I've got no friends at Crossway and I've been here for 6 months, I should have close friends by now, like the friends that I grew up being friends with. That's not sort of how it works, and it will take longer for us to do that. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't seek to make good friendships and people that we can depend on, but it won't feel necessarily in quite the same way. Time is the currency of friendship, and if there's anything Londoners are short of, it's time. Well, life changes and transience came up a lot in the kind of the comments that people made. On the sheet, someone said, I wonder if the transient nature of London means that we mourn or dwell on our past friendships after people leave the city at the expense of our current friendships. But not to say it's not difficult. It is difficult. I've moved sort of, I don't know, six or seven times within London. So I've lived in London 20 years. But in terms of the places I've lived within London, they're about an hour and a half away from one another. So again, it was a bit of a revelation to me going out with Grace. Grace lived in Liverpool. You can get from Liverpool to Manchester in an hour. So it's like I've moved between several different cities. And you kind of think, oh, my mate is in London, but he's an hour and a half away. So when I go and see him, that would be like driving from Liverpool to Manchester for dinner and then back. You'd never do that. That would be crazy. But in London, we kind of think that's normal. And we kind of get used to it. So London is more effort, more work to kind of do this. And we're time short. Time is at a premium. Now, Crossway, that helps because we are focused in East London. But it is worth it. We want to say it's worth it. Again, a couple of more comments from over here. Someone said, I feel like making friends in London and big cities is hard because it's so busy and transient. This was good. This is kind of like sort of positives as well about being in London, being at Crossway. In less urban areas, I find it's hard to make friends because I'm not white British, and non-urban places to be more white and people don't or are hesitant to try to relate to me. However, back in my country of origin, it's also hard to make friends because, although I look like the locals, having grown up in the UK means I'm different internally. I find that at Crossway and some other churches I've been in, it is easier to make friends because our common ground is the gospel and not race or ethnicity or class or gender or marital status. But I also need to work hard at maintaining relationships with non-Christian friends, many of whom live far away because we met at uni or commute to work from different sides of the city, and they are often less intentional at investing in friendships in the way that my Christian friends do. So that was a bit of a theme again that came up, that for some of us, our diary gets filled by our intentional, kind of good at following us up Christian mates, and we're left without the time because we aren't pursuing our non-Christian friends and we're left in that situation. So it is hard work being friends in London. It's hard work going for it, but it is worth it. Just take a moment and think about how much effort you may have put into, now delete as appropriate, how much effort you've put into finding a good dentist, or doctor, or barber, or hairdresser, or counsellor, or nail salon, or therapist, or personal trainer, or financial advisor, even the right tennis coach, and how much effort, how much intentionality have we put into deliberately seeking and choosing and finding good friends? And when we think about how important, how much effort we might put into one of those things relative to the other, considering how much more important friends are to our spiritual life than any of those other things that I've mentioned. And in many ways, that betrays what we value, doesn't it? That we're possibly more inclined to put time into those temporal things and which enhance our lives here on earth, whereas the companions that we walk through life with support our spiritual journey, and choosing them is much more important for our spiritual life. One writer has put it, so friends multiply our pleasures and mitigate our pain. They enrich the quality of our lives far more deeply than any goal we can achieve, any possession we can acquire, and any position we can attain. What good is a birthday or an anniversary or graduation without close friends to celebrate it? What good is a promotion without close friends to rejoice in it? What good is a dining room, a back garden, a patio, a balcony, or a guest room without friends to fill it? Well, turn over on your sheets, and here we are, which I think is something of the answer to the question of, there are too many of us, what do? We need a village. So again, we've got the diagram on the left. What we want is at the bottom. We all want this kind of, you know, the friends group of friends. 2 to 5 close friends who are really a part of our life that we depend on and who depend on us. But we need the bit in the middle. So again, Jamie kind of helped me on this because I had a load of stuff on how we used to live in villages and we don't anymore. We used to live in villages and we don't anymore. David Brooks told us about that via Jamie. And that explains for us that if we're in a big place like London, even, again, Crossway is bigger than kind of your village size number of people where you can know everyone well and have them know you. We all want the inner circle, but we need the village. Now, I've stolen this idea from Jenny Allen. She says this. Part of the way that you get to your inner circle that we're all craving, those few friends that are safe and that we can do life with, we're skipping a village. It might not be a little village out in the countryside, but you have one. You have a little village, and you may live in an urban setting, but there are certain people at your grocery store or on your block or in your church that you see regularly, and it's starting to see the village as a place to find the 4 or 5. If you just go out waiting for the perfect 4 or 5 to fall in your lap, it's never going to happen. So again, the village, what C.S. Lewis calls companions, the matrix of friendship, that's what I think lots of us miss. And we kind of think, oh, I'm just going to magically bump into this, 3 or 5 close friends or that chemistry. Or I think for me, with my slightly kind of perfectionist approach to life, you know, ideally I'd sit back and I'd probably, you know, get like a table. I'd think, okay, who is everybody I know? And who scores highest on my optimal friendship kind of things? Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10 in the following categories: sense of humor, good in a crisis, pushes me on spiritually, doesn't quibble over splitting the bill when we go out for dinner. You know, who scores the highest on all of these? Great, I'll go after that person because I've only got time for kind of the 3 or 5 people that I really want in my life. And that's not how it works. We need to invest in this, a diverse community of consistent, interconnected people where we're in and out of one another's lives. And as we do so, then we will come across those friends with whom we say, you too. And those are the ones that we can then move towards and become closer friends with. Well, time for a discussion round table. Looking at the levels of relationships, so you've got the circle on the right or the picture on the left, acquaintances, everyone we know, 10 to 30 people in our village, in a circle of 2 to 5, God in the middle. What do our relationships look like right now? Do you have a village? Do you have an inner circle? Discuss. Give you about 5 minutes. Right, let me break in there. Hope you had a helpful chat. One of the things that... One of the responses we had, again, this is from someone who, and in general we try not to do this too much. Apologies if saying it a second time is doing it too much. We try not to be like, St Helens, but St Helens Bishopsgate being the church that planted us 5 years ago, so that's a church that a number here, what was it, sort of 50 or so who came in the original planting group from St Helens Bishopsgate. So for that group, that's kind of a context they understand. And someone said, look, at a big church like that, so whatever it is, like 500 or so on a Sunday evening, 400 on Sunday morning, people tend to kind of group together into little groups, little kind of villages, or if you wanted to be more negative, there's the risk of kind of linking together into cliques. And you kind of did that by necessity. You looked around, you thought, I cannot know all 600 people. I need to get a smaller group. the size that Crossway has been, until relatively recently, you could know everybody. You could know 100 people, can kind of just about know 120 people, 150, you're really stretching it, and anything above that, probably not going to happen. And so there's a sense in which we need to sort of make those smaller groups. So we're an in-between size church. We're not big enough to have kind of smaller distinctive groups automatically arising. And again, a bigger church like a bigger church, you're going to be more likely to find someone else who is interested in your little thing and who is like you. That's good, but it's also a negative. G.K. Chesterton once said that the person who lives in a small community is richer than the person who lives in a big community because they cannot choose their companions. So they are forced into relationship with people who are not like them, and that is actually a blessing to us. So we definitely don't want to think, let me just look for people like me and be friends with them because it's easy and it's comfortable. We want to be pushing ourselves. So across all, we've got the opportunity to be the best of all worlds, because there is diversity here, not so much age diversity, but some diverse, there's good diversity. We want to be diverse in the ways that we are diverse within our friendships. But as we grow, there's the risk that we could become cliquish and just associate with people like us. So we need to make that decision, which are we going to do? But then we are big enough that there are these opportunities for us to be relating with different kinds of people, and we need to get out there and kind of work on this, work on our village. Again, a couple of comments that people made on this. One person said, I feel like people are friendly at Crossway, but I get the sense that those who are around since it was planted are weary of the transients or are at capacity with friendships, so aren't necessarily open to the idea of making new friends. And by friends, I mean people who you can share honestly with and share life together. I think this is totally understandable, but means that new people tend to make friends with other new people, which is a shame. So if that's us, if that's our situation, if we are in that situation where you kind of think, I've got all my friends, I'm fine, then perhaps we need to be thinking about reprioritizing and thinking, who within my friendship, do you know what, they're probably all right. They've got lots of other friends, and maybe we need to kind of send them away to be kind of friends with and kind of also sort of split up some of these friendship groups so that we can welcome new people in. Also, I mean, the other side of it is there's a risk that for some of those who came at the beginning of Crossway, and now your friends have left. You're on the situation that I was in at St. Alan's after being there kind of sort of 3 years or so, and you look around and you go, oh, my friends have all moved away, they've left. And that is difficult. One thing that we did at that time, so this was sort of 2005 or so, and I kind of looked around. I went, I've got loads of, you know, I know hundreds of people, literally hundreds of people, a couple hundred people that I can nod to on a Sunday evening, but who would I call at 2 a.m.? And we formed like a book group, called it the Book Group of Men, because it was a group of men reading books. And I look back, and some really good friends are still in that group. Actually, none of my closest friends were in that group, but they were the friends that we needed at that time, and some of the guys within that group are close friends to one another still. And for all of us, in whatever situation we're in, it does take work. It won't just happen. So we need to keep initiating. In the podcast with Jenny Allen, who talks about this village stuff, the presenter's guy called Kerry Newhoff, it's a leadership podcast that I occasionally listen to, and that's how I came across this one. He says, no, but I feel like I initiate too much. I'm waiting for it to be mutual. And Jenny Allen says, get over it. And she says, look, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to everybody. I'm talking to myself, if you want friends, you have to initiate. If you don't initiate, don't expect anybody to initiate with you. We live in a world where this is the lost art. So if you have the energy to do it, you better do it. And as a byproduct, a lot of your friends may have friends because you initiate. Everyone that has friends initiates and keeps doing it. And again, they sort of encourage that if you're that person who feels like you're always initiating and you've asked 3 or 4 times and you kind of think, oh, they don't want to be my friend, double check with them and say, how do you feel about the invitations that I'm giving you? Is it annoying? Because they might well say, no, it's just that I'm genuinely really busy, but I really want to hang out with you. When I lived out in Harold Hill, there was a guy called Andy Walsh, and Andy was the king of last-minute invitations, and he'd always be like, can you hang out tonight? And I would say, no. And he'd say, can you hang out this afternoon? And I'd be like, I can't. But sort of 1 in 7 times, I'd be like, yes, I'm free. And it was fantastic because I don't do that. And he was very, very good at doing it. So where do we find our village? The best way is, now this is not going to descend into an advert for serving at church, but serving is one of the best ways to get friends. As you're on the serving team, as you're doing kids, as you're doing creche, as you're doing welcome team, I think back to kind of like the door-to-door outreach team that I was on. We were meeting together each Sunday, going out, knocking doors. There is, again, kind of doing a challenge together, being on mission together, the sheer terror of standing on someone's doorstep, about to knock their door, knowing that, you know, Portia or Luigi have kind of got my back. They're kind of just there, sort of really, really kind of making good friends with those folks. So as we do that, look around for people who are working hard to get to know God better and using their lives well in his service, committing their time and energy and gifts to the kingdom, in a way that inspires us too. So, you know, if we're enthusiastic about children's ministry, then if we serve on the children's ministry, we'll find other people who are enthusiastic about the children's ministry, and we're more likely to, you know, sort of be that person who is for us, that kind of that you too place. Or whether that's the CAP ministry, or if you're particularly passionate about that, or Talking Point, or indeed door-to-door evangelism. We're not doing it at the moment, I don't think, but we're going to get back to it definitely. Through all of this, also, remember God's sovereignty. A couple of people said, what is the role of the small group in this? What is the role of our Crossway groups? And I think, again, we want to be realistic here. Chances are we're probably not going to end up being best friends forever with everybody in our small group. But the people in your small group aren't there by chance. God is sovereign. He has put those people in your small group. And again, G.K. Chesterton's thing of a small community, you've not chosen those people. And you might think, these aren't people that I would naturally get on with. Well, what a gift, because we are having to get on with them and love them as we are there week by week, and let's be there week by week. C.S. Lewis in The Four Loves. Basically, any book you read on friendship that's been written since C.S. Lewis's book, since C.S. Lewis's stuff on Four Loves, quotes Four Loves more than anything else. So just go back to the source material. C.S. Lewis says, this is on the sheet, in friendship, we think we have chosen our peers. In reality, a few more miles between certain houses, the choice of one university instead of another, posting to different regiments, the accident of a topic being raised or not raised at a first meeting, any of these chances might have kept us apart. But for a Christian, there are, strictly speaking, no chances. A secret master of the ceremonies has been at work. Think of Paul in Acts 17 saying that God has chosen the places where he's put us, chosen the places where everyone lives so that we might seek out and find God. God has chosen to put us in our street, in our workplace, in our small group, in our gym, in our football club, in our whatever it is. So you've got a bit of an exercise here. The friend map. Now, I've added in Crossway as the first one because, well, we're all here, so saved you some ink there. Identify places and spaces in your life, examples, church, school, work, neighborhood, etc., and write them on the top line. Think of the people within each space that you interact with. Then think about it in terms of friendship and who you, and it actually says who you want to get to know better because I copied and pasted from something else, but I think who you could get to know better, possibly for their benefit, not necessarily just for your benefit, who you could get to know better, write up to four names in the boxes below each space. So take a bit of time to do that. You can chat about it with others if you want, or just we can all sit in silence and write on our pages. Over to you. Okay, hopefully everyone has sorted themselves out and sorted one another out. All friendship problems are now solved. Not. The hard work is still ahead of us. So within this group, it's great. It's good that you guys are chatting. You know, it'd be really awkward if it was like, oh, thankfully he stood back up again because it was the worst on our table. I'm never going to be friends with these people. Who do we want to look for? Within these arenas, who do we want to look for? Well, we have got a few reflections, many indeed from Proverbs, Proverbs being one of the books in the Bible that speaks the most about friendship. Proverbs 13:20 says, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. And so as we're kind of thinking, okay, we've got, this is my village that I want to move towards, that I want this kind of diverse, interconnected, regular kind of group of people. Within that, who do I want to move towards in particular to be good friends? Well, we like to think of ourselves as kind of decisive, independent individuals, but realistically, rather than being walls between us and others, one writer said, it's more like permeable membranes between us through which microparticles can pass back and forth. And what passes back and forth is osmosis type stuff. What passes between us is values, convictions, moral standards, habits, and goals. And we like to think, oh, well, I'm discerning, I'll take the good but leave the bad. But the writer of the Proverbs says, no. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. You may have heard the kind of the common truism, show me your five closest friends, and I will show you who you will be in 5 years' time. And there is a lot of truth in that. These values pass back and forth, whether we realize it or not. And so despite our illusions of individuality, we end up being deeply affected by either the wisdom or the foolishness of our friends. We see it in very kind of trivial things. So kind of, mammals, middle-aged men in Lycra, sort of guys in their 40s, 50s, who sort of cycle, and they're kind of a Saturday morning, they're there cycling. And you kind of think, well, 5 years beforehand, they would have looked at those guys and thought, oh, a bunch of weirdos, I'm never going to wear Lycra, and I don't care about 5,000-pound carbon fiber bikes. And then they kind of get into that group, and kind of they get more into that group, and then they think wearing Lycra is normal because they hang out with people who wear Lycra. Whatever our kind of friendship group is, that's the kind of thing that happens. I joined a boxing gym once, and literally I bought my boxing gloves and I bought my kind of boxing bag that you put your boxing gloves in because you're carrying so much kit, and I went twice and that was it. But I thought that was the thing that you do because I was around people who did that. And friendships can make us better or make us worse, therefore, C.S. Lewis. Friendship can be a school of virtue, but also a school of vice. It is ambivalent. It makes good men better and bad men worse. If you search friend in the New Testament, there's not a lot of references, but this one is striking. Luke 23, verses 11 to 12. And Herod with his soldiers treated Jesus with contempt and mocked him. Then, arraying Jesus in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other. Our friendships can make us better, or they can make us worse. So in terms of seeking our close friends, not necessarily our casual friends, not necessarily the bigger group, because we want to be friends with people for their benefit, possibly who we don't consider to be particularly wise, of course people who don't know Jesus, but in terms of the people that we allow to get really close to influence us, we want to think, are these people wise? Do I want to become like this person? And so therefore, we want to look out for the 2 to 5. A man of many companions, Proverbs 18:24, may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Now, you read on this sort of stuff, there's so many different qualifications for what you need to become close friends. But I think that there's a lot here. Again, this is Jenny Allen. For a close friend, you probably need 3 or more of these things. And this comes into, because pretty sure I've been in a discussion this morning, and how does this work being kind of close friends with, or being friends with my neighbor who's not necessarily a believer, or kind of our school friend, that sort of thing. Well, we can be good friends with someone, or we can be friends with someone with these things. So proximity. Proverbs 27:10, better a friend who is near than a brother who is far away. And as we all know, time is the big limiter in London. And so Bill Rawlins, in his friendship research, he speaks of functional proximity. So that's why so many people end up being friends with their work colleagues or people that they're kind of, you know, their kids are at the same school, that sort of thing. Because functionally, you may not be geographically close, but functionally you're close. You spend a lot of time together in the week. However, Crossway, we do have the great advantage of being an East London-focused church. We're not spread all over the place, and so there is greater geographical proximity for us. And that is a real gift, because when you really need a friend, when you're really in crisis, 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever, it's a lot easier if your friend lives a few minutes away rather than an hour and a half away. So there's a real gift to that. What does someone say? This was an interesting. Someone said, I think there was a study about friendships, maybe Australian, which used a definition for close friends about having both been in each other's homes in the past 12 months. I initially thought, that doesn't apply in London with networks and going out lots, etc., until I thought about who would be in my close friend category, and it actually did map quite well with having been in each other's homes in the last 12 months. So that's something we want to be seeking for, hospitality, proximity, number one. Number two, vulnerability. We're not great at this. Again, crossway comment. In general, British culture is not one of openness or wearing your heart on your sleeve. People put on a front so they appear like everything is fine. Truth. It takes time for people to build enough trust to open up with one another. How can we expedite building trust? Be more bold and willing to open up and honest about the true state of our lives. How can this be modelled well by leadership? I don't actually know the answer to that last one. We'll try. And if you know, let me know and tell us if we get better or worse at it. But vulnerability in our friendships. And there's something here about kind of a matching of expectations. If there's someone who always shares, always shares, always shares, always shares, and the other person always says, oh, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine, or just shares a tiny little thing, or it's a little bit stressful at work, but the other person sharing big, then that is not a friendship that will go particularly deep. There needs to be some kind of match in the level of vulnerability. Accountability. A close friend, we need to be someone who will call us out if we step out of line. We can come to that a bit more. But there was a great story of this American footballer who is top of his game and also doing loads of cocaine. And everyone around him was like, you're the man, you're great, you're great, you're great. And then one of his real good friend, as he said later, was the only one who stepped forward and said, look, mate, I cannot, you've got to stop doing this. Otherwise, we can't be friends because you are headed for a crisis. And that was the thing that pulled him back. He was the real friend. We need our friends to be accountable. Call us out if we step out of line. Mission. We've talked a little bit about this. That was C.S. Lewis's U2 moment, something outside ourselves, whether that's white mice or dominoes, a common passion. Again, looking back on friendships, I kind of think, Jim. There was a guy at Oak Hall that was really into coffee, and I'm sort of quite into coffee, so he used to go around his and he'd make me a fancy coffee. We went to the London Coffee Festival together, and then we talked about other things as well. But the coffee was kind of like the excuse almost, like the white mice or the dominoes. But ultimately, of course, as believers, we have this great mission. Then there's a smaller focus of how we're carrying out that mission. We want to look out for other people who are seeking to carry it out in the same context as us. Proximity. Vulnerability, accountability, mission, and consistency. That is, that we don't quit when it gets hard. Quoting Jenny Allen again, she says, I'm not saying there's never a time to quit. There's certainly toxic relationships that can't be healed. But I love the verse that says, as much as it concerns you, live at peace with everyone. It means you may not be able to fix the problem. But, she says this, and I think this is probably true, she says, I think we've gotten too good at boundaries and not good enough at good friendships. And we need to be careful that we're not setting boundaries around good friendships. So if our friend says to us something that we don't like, that may be because it's the exact thing that we need to hear. And it's not at that point that we run screaming away because it's got slightly difficult. Now, again, you can have friends that aren't all of those things. I mean, probably for many of us, we've got close friends who don't live near us. You know, so the person that I would think of probably as my best friend and has been in South Africa for the last sort of number of years. But we've got the others there. Yeah, just again on mismatched expectations, that is the main thing that kills friendships. Speaking to someone recently who said that they are having to have a difficult conversation with one of their friends to say, look, I cannot be the friend that you want me to be. I've moved, you've moved, you still want the same level of connection. I can't do that anymore. If you can be okay with that, then we can stay friends. But if you can't be okay with that, well, then the friendship is not going to work. We need to talk. Is it good for us to talk about these things? What are our expectations of the friendship? I think of a friendship that I guess I kind of messed up because my mate was more vulnerable with me and kind of invited me into a close relationship with him. And I didn't want to for various, basically there's, sort of things that I didn't want to be honest with him about at that time. And so I pulled back and that kind of, that friendship sort of slightly moved away. I'd say he's still a mate, but he's not a good mate and he could have been, which is a shame. So a little bit of a kind of just an encouragement. Let's go for it. We do need to settle. Again, waiting for the magical friends to just appear, drop out of nowhere, and we need to introduce ourselves, begin conversations, invite people around, and not let all the cultural or differences between us, so not let age, or married or single, or kids or no kids, or culture or ethnicity, educational background, job status, or any of the other things that the world thinks is relevant, get in the way. And then, I think this is going to be lastly, basically, who do you need, and who needs you? Again, kind of risk for those who are kind of like here and are like, I've got my circle of close friends and there's not really any room to include anyone new. Sorry about that. and others. One of the great irony is I've not got any time for friends because I'm so busy doing ministry. Well, we need good friends to support us, and we need to be sacrificial in making new friends, even if you have a full group of friends, for the sake of the new person, for the sake of the person who is without friends, mostly because of love. But also, you may find out that in a few years, you're the person without any friends, and you're on the outside, and we want to be a church that is continually looking out for one another. We need to think of energy giving versus energy taking friends, people I need and people who need me. So I'm just going to say, just take 1 minute. I think probably go over by sort of 5 minutes. Just take 1 minute to just quickly think, people I need, people who need me, people I need to walk with me and look after me in my Christian life who challenge me. And as I look around the church, people who I think, maybe write this down subtly, fold the page over, people who I think, do you know what, I think I'm not sure if they've got many friends. I'm not sure where they're at. They seem to be slightly on the outside of things. Perhaps I could look out for them. Just a couple of minutes on that, and then we'll quickly finish off. Okay, that might be something that you want to take away and do as a little homework. Sorry to break in again. In fact, as we come into land, I'm just going to point you down to the end of the page, to the Taking the Truth Deeper section. And the thing to take away is, kind of based on the friend map from the previous page, pray about the names on your friend map, and circle 3 to 5 people on the whole page to pursue deep relationships with. And you might want to let them know that you're going to do that. Or you might want to kind of do it a bit more subtly and kind of move towards them. Invite them into your village first and then potentially kind of be pursuing them as closer friends. I also want to say there's a few resources there. The podcast that I mentioned, I've kind of dropped in there as well, the books. Another one that I forgot to put on, Tim Keller, It Takes a City to Raise a Child. That's a talk that Tim Keller gave a number of years ago, which I think particularly for us here in London is super, super helpful. It's called, It Takes a City, you know the phrase, It Takes a Village to Raise a Child, old proverb. Tim Keller, It Takes a City to Raise a Child. Really, really helpful. One of the things he reflects on at the end of that, I kind of added him into this, into the table on the front, acquaintances and then CBA. At the end of it, someone says, you know, kind of in the Q&A, Tim, you know, it's really hard being friends in New York because there's so much turnover, like London. How do you handle that? And he said, well, I've got my A friends, which is his close friends. Then I got my kind of B group of friends, B-list friends, which is like friends. C-list friends would be like your casual friends, and then kind of everyone that he knows. And he's like, and when one of my A-list friends leaves, I then basically kind of bring someone in from the B-list. As kind of, you know, you can just imagine his mate sitting there going, oh, really? Oh, okay. Thanks for that. See you later, Tim. But the thing is, and again, reading through even the secular literature on this, the word that comes up again and again and again and again about people who are good at being friends is intentionality. Being intentional about it. That if we think it's just magical, if we think, oh, if it's a real friendship, it will just happen. That's not life. And I think particularly that's not life in London. That's just not the context we're in. The only things that really happen are the things that we commit to making happen. Who do we want to be? I'm going to kind of take this quite lightly, not least because I think Jamie's stuff covered this a bit more already in terms of how we are to be. We're to be trustworthy, we're to be truthful, and we're to be teachable. We're to be trustworthy, we're to be there for people when they need us, while also recognizing we're not Jesus. You will let me down. I will let you down, but we forgive one another, we repent, and we come back, and we go for it. Trustworthy. Jesus lays down his life for his friends, and he doesn't expect it back. So the base understanding of our friendship should be sacrifice. Friendship is sacrifice. Not just what do I get from others, but am I serving them? What if they ask me for help in a way I don't like to help? You know, they ask me for help with DIY, but I'd much rather be like making cakes or something. But they're my friend. I want to help them. Or something happens in their life that makes me feel uncomfortable. They go through a particularly traumatic period of suffering, and I feel uncomfortable talking to them about it. Well, the person I want to care for is them, and so I will be prepared to feel uncomfortable. I will sacrifice that. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Truthful, again, telling people what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. And that works both ways, so that we need to be prepared to say that to others. And I think I put my sub point in the wrong place here. Love the person more than the friendship. Charlie Screen gave a talk on friendship, and he said that if I'm not prepared to risk a friendship by saying something that the other person won't like, then I'm not their friend at all. If I'm not prepared to risk losing the friendship by saying that something you might not like, if that's what you need to hear, then I'm not your friend at all. It's actually a friendship of selfishness. It's for me, and it's not for you. I'm sure a number of us will have had that kind of experience where you think, I know I need to say this, but I might lose the friendship. What do we do? The true friend will speak. But also teachable. We need to recognize that when people speak to us, we need to be ready to listen to it. Again, the stuff on boundaries and not just pushing away, not just dispensers of wisdom, but receivers of it. And again, back up, this is for my final, just the final reflection. Not everyone will be your BFF, and that's okay. So kind of the close friendship group may change. So the two to five kind of close friends that are a part of your life that are supporting you, that may change. And the people in that group may not end up being your best friends forever. So I think a particular situation, it was when I was living in the Middlesex Street estate, particularly focused on evangelism in that estate. And I was just tired of the transients. I was like, enough already. I've been in London kind of sort of 15 years by that point, and I've said hello and goodbye and hello, goodbye to so many friends. And I was like, I'm not going to push with these guys that I'm living with. I've got my couple of good friends. I know who they are. You know, one lives in Cumbria, the other lives in, the other side of London, but they're my good friends and that's enough. And it was this Proverbs 27 verse 10 that really rebuked me and was really helpful. Do not forsake your friend and your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house, like your real best friend's house, in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. We need people in our local community who are part of that. And Phil and Jeff, the guys that I lived with at that time, became really close friends. We would pray together every morning. We were accountable to one another. We were doing ministry together. Since we moved out, I've not really seen them very much. We're good friends. They came to our wedding. Phil is now working at a church not too far from here. And we bump into one another now and then. But they were the close friends that I needed at that time. And again, I think some of us miss out on the friends we need in the situation we're in because we're waiting for the BFF who we'll be friends with forever. Or we've got that friend and we think, I don't need people now. But we do. We all need people now. And that community, that group may change over time while we're here. But we need to keep working at it. Well, look, I hope that that's been helpful or not unhelpful. I hope that's not made us, I hope that's encouraged us rather than discouraged us. Let me pray and then we can head out into the sun. Let me pray. Lord Jesus, we thank you that you are our perfect friend. You are the one that supplies all of our needs. You are the one that provides our deepest needs for intimacy and for love and for acceptance and for all that we desire. And we pray that we would be, in turn, good friends to one another. That as you have served us, we would seek to serve others, that we would be prepared to lay down our lives in the service of others. And we do pray, Lord, that Crossway would not be just a friendly and welcoming church, and we pray that it would be a friendly and welcoming church, but it would be a church where we are committed to serving and loving and knowing one another deeply in order to love and serve you better. And we pray that for your glory. Amen.